it's valuable for yourself as a coach, but then on the flip side, also for the athlete to describe like, hey, I love the big goals. That's great, but let's break this down into a little bit smaller goals. Like, I think it would be super impressive based on where you're currently starting at. Hey, let's shoot for this first. Coaches, this podcast is sponsored by Samson Equipment. They have been providing elite strength training equipment and professional weight room solutions since 1976. If you value high quality products, great customer service, and a company with integrity, make Samson Equipment your go-to. Visit them at www.samsonequipment.com. That's Samson equipment.com. And let them know that the Talkin' Shop podcast sent you. Welcome to the Talkin' Shop podcast, where I'm here to share stories, lessons, and experiences in sports performance and professional development. And in this episode, I'm extremely excited to share with you the three biggest coaching lessons that I personally have learned in 2023. Because now we are in 4 days into 2024, January 4th, at the recording of this episode, just reflecting back on the one biggest lesson I learned from my time at TC Boost Sports Performance at my current job 4 or 5 months in at Northwestern University. One kind of just in general training that I've just reflected on in the past kind of year, a little bit more X's and O's. And actually, I'll give you a fourth lesson, a bonus lesson at the very end. So I'm excited to share, not that this is the entire truth, but we can extract what is true, what applies to you, and kind of how we can all get better from these lessons. So let's do it. And how I will be sharing these lessons will be in a simple context, kind of explain the background. I'll share an anecdote or like a light bulb or just a real life example, and then end with kind of the lesson. So three or four things, that format. And without further ado, the first one, and that is, I can only make kids err. And that sounds funny on first kind of listen, but I can only make kids faster. I can't make them fast, right? Just as TC Boost was a speed facility. I think that the longer that I do this, genetics play a bigger role than we give credit or that we can really quantify. And that's why it's like kind of hard to really kind of wrap your head around it. So genetics is basically the ceiling of your peak athletic performance, your potential, and training just helps you raise that bar. So I don't get to control what your ceiling is, the fastest you can possibly be, but 100% we can raise the bar from where it currently is closer to your ceiling, right? And this was a junior in high school, currently playing college baseball. It was his second session, I think, in his first session, he hit like a 101 fly 10. I was like, oh my gosh, like you are fast, right? And then his second session, he hit a sub one. And it's like, I didn't do anything, obviously, like we'd only trained twice together, right? And he had done no formal speed training kind of in the past. So how was he able to hit an elite kind of fly 10 or a very above average fly 10 only two official sessions into his like speed training journey? And that's because that kid is just fast, right? And I'll just use like a 60 yard dash for an example. You know, not every kid can run a 6.6. I think we can all just agree, right? But a kid that starts at a 6 at a 7.6, well, he can probably get to a 7.0. He can probably get to a 7.1, right? But it's like, just to be a little bit more realistic, and I guess this is the lesson of crush it, crush training, obviously, but you have to have realistic expectations and how much gains and progress can you really expect from someone, right? And this is kind of like sucky to admit or accept or kind of like say out loud, but thinking that everyone can hit a sub one fly 10, every male athlete can jump over 35, every female athlete can jump over. That's just like, there's a reason those numbers are those numbers. And we regard those numbers as crazy fast or crazy high or whatever it may be. But 100% kids can get better, right? I can only make kids err. So I think it's valuable for yourself as a coach, but then on the flip side, also for the athlete to describe like, hey, I love the big goals. That's great. But let's break this down into a little bit smaller goals. Like, I think it would be super impressive based on where you're currently starting at. Hey, let's shoot for this first, right? So I think it's a win-win all around. But just working with 8, 9-year-olds all the way up to professionals, kids that I've trained for my entire 3 years at TC Boost to just, you know, one or two or three sessions, whatever it may be, was just an interesting light bulb. And I think in the long run, helps out kind of everyone in the process. So just keep in the back of your mind that genetics play a bigger part than you think, and you can get kids better and go all in on that. But there's some realistic expectations as well of just genetics, and are people just fast kind of right off the bat. Second, sport is what matters. And this might be a no duh, but maybe it's become more popular to kind of talk bad about training, or people that are trying to be like a little bit more untraditional kind of in the strength and conditioning sports performance space of saying, oh, there's no barbell at half court at halftime. Like, there's no one rep max squat in the middle of a competition to give you more basketball points, right? And I used to like super roll my eyes at that when I would hear someone kind of phrase it like that. And I get it now. And not that I'm going to completely kind of drink the Kool-Aid, but the anecdote I have here is we were doing kind of like a, not necessarily like a test, but a conditioning kind of challenge. And there were two kids kind of picking up the rear, and, you know, everyone else had kind of finished, and it was like a competition between those two guys. Everyone was cheering them on. And one kid kind of came in second last. So he kind of beat the other kid, and the other kid came in last. Well, the kid that came in last is a starter on the team and is going to perform a lot, and the other kid probably won't play that much, at least for right now. And it's not that that conditioning test didn't matter, and it's not that there was that like competition, mental toughness aspect to that, but it's like at the end of the day, you have to be good at your sport, and that's the only thing that matters in being good at your sport, right? Or another way to phrase that kind of like cliche quote at the beginning is, how often are your best weight room people your best athletes? Or how often would you have like the one rep max, for example, or even like max vertical jumper sprint time? How often would that have a 1.0 positive linear correlation to if the coach ranked how good they are at baseball, basketball, whatever the sport may be? So it's not to say that training doesn't matter, right? You can get kids better. But a kid can have all the speed in the world, but if they can't like track a fly ball, to use that baseball example, right? Or if they have slow reaction time, or they can't read a defender's hips in basketball, they can't like apply that speed as best as possible. So I think it's important to keep in mind, and I guess this will tie into the third lesson of stuff has to transfer, and training matters, and you can get kids better. But at the end of the day, like, to be good at your sport, you have to be good at your sport, right? So how do these things that we work on in training actually go to the sport and help the sport? So the lesson would be like, what's the biggest impact that you can have? And understand that like someone can crush all the weight room stuff, be the biggest improver in strength, size, speed, jumping, whatever. But if they still can't hit a fastball, I guess to go back to that baseball example, right? If they still suck at the free throw line under pressure, like, does it matter? Yes. But what's the most impactful thing, or what matters the most, right? If we're all here for sports. So not to rephrase myself 17,000 times, but understanding that that stuff matters, but sport ultimately is going to kind of trump everything. And next, consequently, how do we help sport even better? And this is a quote that I heard Boo Schexnader say on the Just Fly Performance podcast. If you want to go find that episode, it was pretty recent, relative January 2024. So it was probably a few months ago, that variation decreases transfer, but increases performance. And this is pretty interesting at TC Boost, being more of like a sprint, jump, athletic, not really lifting facility, doing a lot of plyometric variations and hurdle jumps and hops and med ball throws and box jumps and stuff like that, where it was interesting to see the kids that could like pick it up right away, right? Or the kid that sucked on the first rep, you say, hey, just try this, and they're able to pick that up really fast, right? They're just a little bit more athletic, a little bit better body awareness. Or kids that over the course of 1 to 4 sets pick stuff up really, really well. Or kids that like, they just suck at a certain exercise. And it's like, why are we here? Are we here to get really good at that one med ball throw or that one hurdle jump variation, right? Or are we here to get better at the sport? Kind of like the previous lesson that I shared earlier. So variation is going to decrease performance, right? So if you rotate, like we'll use med ball exercises and baseballs, that's been a theme of this podcast so far. And I have my pocket radar that I measure med ball throws. Well, if I rotate it every 2 weeks, well, the numbers aren't going to get that much better, specifically on that one med ball throw. But if variation increases transfer, well, I don't need them to get really good at performing in that one variation. It's not about chucking that one med ball as hard as possible. I need that to help you throw a baseball harder, to swing a bat harder, to be more durable because your muscles are a little bit stronger, a little bit more conditioned for a little bit more volume or challenge of rotation, right? And just with the kind of unpredictability of sports, it's almost good to keep the athlete kind of on their toes every few weeks. So they can get better at the skill of rotation, right? Not just that one med ball exercise itself. So I have a visual example here. And for those that are just listening in audio form, basically I have like the first explosive block of a lift. And in this phase, it's a barbell or trap bar reset squat jump with a VBT number. Paired with that is a box drop to hurdle jump. The first 2 weeks, we're going to jump off a 12-inch box. And the second 2 weeks, weeks 3 and 4, we're going to hop off of an 18-inch box into the hurdle jump, right? So that's just a simple variation where it's going to provide continual challenge. And if you're really good at jumping off of a 12-inch box, that doesn't necessarily mean that you'll be super good at an 18-inch box, right? Maybe that extra 6 inches, a little bit more gravity and challenge would throw you off, right? But it's like, it's not the 12-inch box and the hurdle itself that I need you to get really good at. What's the point? The point is to get a little bit stronger, stiffer in your lower half, a little bit more coordinated in reversing your momentum right from down to up. That's the point. So is it really about the exercise itself or providing a challenge for those things that I'm trying to accomplish with that exercise? And then paired with that would be a resisted core rotation off of a Kaiser or cable stack. 2 week, we'll do walking rotations for kind of like a double smoothness effort. And then we'll go into a little bit more challenge, like an alternating drop step where it's pivot, rotate, recover, pivot, rotate, kind of going back and forth, where it's like athletes, if they pick up that walking rotation in the second week, well, then we're just grooving that exercise. But could we get like more gains and more progress and more challenge by rotating it every 2 exercises? So how I've been describing this is if it's a main exercise, something that you would track, right? There is value in consistency. If I rotate barbell squat jumps to dumbbell, to this, to single leg, to split squat, like that's probably going to not have that much transfer because I would consider that like a main exercise, right? You can make a lot of progress in 4 weeks in a squat jump, making it a little bit heavier, trying to stay within that zone, the VBT kind of bar speed zone. But the small exercise, like I'm not really going to, I can't really track their box drop to hurdle jump unless I do like ground contact time. But eventually they're going to reach a kind of plateau where you can't really get any faster. And how soon would they achieve that, right? Probably week 2 or week 3. And I have a bottom example. So the first exercise, same thing in the explosive block, would be a run rocket sprint at 50% velocity decrement. Well, paired with that is going to be a med ball overhead throw. 2 weeks supine on your back and 2 weeks kind of like a rocker overhead throw variation. So as I'm kind of talking through this, think about how often or how quickly, how frequently would you expect an athlete to suck at an exercise if it's their first time doing it to getting it kind of like that. And I would guess probably that like 2 or 3 week kind of time frame versus odds are if you know how to squat jump, you can do it with a bar on your back, right? Now, the weight is going to change over time for sure, but the exercise in and of itself is going to be pretty simple to complete, right? So just to give some examples of, yes, there's main exercises, and 100% consistency leads to better performance, and that core skill is probably going to transfer, right? Becoming more explosive in your lower body, right? Being better at resisted sprinting for just overall explosiveness, lower leg stiffness, acceleration mechanics, and stuff like that. But understanding why we're here is to have this stuff transfer to make them better at sport, right? Not just performing in the weight room. So this is just an experiment that I've currently been working with, and I've really liked how it's looked. I think it keeps the athletes engaged, but I think it also checks off the main box of why we're really all here, right? For increased transfer to get them better at their sport. And the bonus of this podcast that is a lesson kind of from both TC Boost and Northwestern is the minimums don't cut it. And that's a kind of like, not hot take, but more of an engaging way to maybe phrase it. But basically, like, athletes can rely on, oh, I work really hard. I go to all my practices. I go to a private coach once a week to work on that sport-specific skill or whatever it may be. But it's like, all of the kids that you're competing, all the kids that are also good do the same thing. So it's like, what, you can't just do the minimums if you want like maximum results and maximum kind of output, right? So I think it is a huge opportunity for athletes to learn how to train, right? Because every kid could lift and sprint and do stuff like that. But do they know how long they should rest in between their sprints so their sprints can be as high quality as possible, right? Do they understand a high-low model of, you know, stacking your stress and then recovering and stuff like that versus just making every day hard just to quote-unquote grind, right? Do they know how to properly warm up so when they have three or four working sets on their sheet, it's actually three or four working sets instead of the first two are really just kind of an extended warm-up, right? So within the things that we do, within those quote-unquote minimums, how do we maximize that? And that's one of the biggest surprises, whether it was at TC Boost or at Northwestern, is like, obviously as a coach and someone in this field, I should know how to do those things so I could teach those things. But because it's so simple, relatively speaking to me, assuming that other people or other athletes would know how to do that, I think has been a pleasant surprise. But then on the flip side of minimums, well, if we're all doing the minimums, what on top can we do to help get more improvement, right? Especially when you get to the college level, like you're only looking for like a 1% to 5% improvement, right? You're already in the top percent of all athletes in your sport. So if everyone, you know, like NCAA, for those who aren't familiar, you get 8-hour weeks where you can only do 8 hours of sport-specific things, actual training. And you have 20-hour weeks when you're kind of more in season. Well, if everyone's 20 hours includes a really legit sport coaching staff, a good head coach, good assistant, stuff like that. If every 20 hours also includes someone like myself, I think I'm competent and good at what I do, a competent strength and conditioning coach, sports performance coach. Well, if most universities have some sort of nutrition, right? Some sort of psych option. Well, what else can you do that maybe other people aren't to get even more improvement, right? Above those minimums. Well, it's going to be those habits. It's going to be, you know, how many, let's just use the Big Ten. How many future all big, first team all Big Ten athletes get 8 hours of sleep a night? Or athletes in the Big Ten? Probably not all of them, right? Well, how many first team athletes do that? Probably more than not, right? So sleep could be a big opportunity. Yeah, most schools might have a nutrition like a professional there, but how many of them meet once a week, twice a month, whatever it may be, and actually use that resource as opposed to just check in at the beginning of the year, at the end of the year, and maybe once in the middle? Probably not everyone is utilizing that resource as best as they could, right? How many athletes actually get to the session more than 10 minutes before, let's say 30, let's say 25, I don't know, 20, just more than the average person, to really like take care of their soft tissue and stuff like that, to get their mind right, get their body right, just like warming up for warm-up sets, to actually crush the session, right? Versus it takes them 15 minutes into the actual session itself to feel really hot and really warm. So I think minimums don't cut it. And it's hard to do those minimums, right? Not every athlete can do that, hence why the higher up you get, those things don't cut it. But if you want more, if you want to go beyond learning how to train, but then learning how to take care of yourself outside of training, I think is a huge, huge opportunity for a lot of athletes. And last, kind of concluding, if I had to summarize all of this in a few bullet points, would be understanding your role in development. So as I've been trying to rationalize and wrap my head around the impact that I can have, I think it shifted a little bit versus what I might have thought, you know, 6 months ago, a year ago, 2-3 years ago, where the sport matters the most and how do you use yourself to help that the most. And obviously, like, we can all understand that, but it's like, I got to get my kids bigger, faster, stronger, all this stuff, weight room numbers going up. But it's just hard to quantify and maybe put your finger on that thing that made them that much better on their sport, as opposed to, it's easy to, oh, they jumped higher and they look better on the field. Yeah, that obviously is correlated, but I don't think that that's the only thing that can help. But then on the flip side, there's kids that can make those gains, but still like suck at the sport, right? Or that could be, they're really a good weight room athlete, right? But they're not the best at their sport. I think it's good to have kind of realistic expectations. So as I've been trying to, like I said, rationalize the impact that I can have, having a little bit more realistic expectations, not putting too much pressure on myself, or maybe shifting where I can put pressure on, I think has been an interesting light bulb that I've kind of had. Like I said, working with the consistency of a team, but then on the flip side, working with youth athletes all the way up to professionals and kind of seeing all aspects of LTAD, but also just all different like levels of training. And just how to make stuff transfer, right? If we agree that like the point of doing stuff in the weight room on the turf that's not practice is to help practice, which is to help the game, right? Then what are our new kind of different things or tweaks that you can make to kind of help promote that even more? So those are some of my biggest takeaways, things I've been kind of ruminating and reflecting on in 2023. So hopefully that made a little bit of sense and you can kind of get the truth, not that all of this was 100% true, but understand kind of where I'm coming from and consequently how you can apply this lesson or not, right? Maybe you might not agree with something, but it just reaffirms what you believe in just a little bit more. So hopefully this was enlightening. This was great to share, and happy training.